Hi, I'm Michael Winslow from Police Academy, One Through Infinity, and Spaceballs with Mel Brooks, and you are listening to
Canned Air. Inhale it and enjoy.
End message.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
And I'm Jack Doherty.
And joining us today, our guest today, man, this guy's got 25 world record, video game world records. Can you believe that? Two of which are very impressive. They jumped out to me. Double Dragon beat in 15 minutes and 43 seconds. And this one is going to ring through to Canned Air because we did a playthrough of this game a while back, but we certainly didn't do it in this amount of time. 19 minutes and 8 seconds. Captain America and the Avengers.
Yeah, we didn't even come close to that.
No.
It was like an hour video.
It took like 4 videos to cover that, so pretty impressive. He's also here to talk about his paperback guides, The Easy Way Out, which are strategy guides, and man, so much more. History of the game, cool artwork. There's currently one out for the Friday the 13th Nintendo Entertainment System game and upcoming Fester's Quest. These things look awesome. We welcome speedrunner and high score enthusiast Steve Lin, also known as 8-Bit Steve. Sir, how are you?
Wow, that is quite an intro, isn't it?
I know. I need a drink over after that. And a cigarette.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I don't typically, I sent you guys stuff, right? Like, hey, this is stuff that I have, but I don't usually go around and say, like, I have this many records or whatever. So I try to keep it pretty modest with that stuff. I find that when I interact with people and I open with, hey, I've got 50 video game records, they just kind of turn off, right? Like, it's sort of like from a pretentious point of view.
I understand,
But, right, but so I...
You're in good company. Our listeners are going to love that stuff. They're going to love it. I promise you. I'm excited to talk about all these things a little bit later in the episode. But first, we're going to be talking about the hardest games we've ever had the displeasure of playing. Maybe not displeasure, but the games that torment us throughout time. And our retro roundtable have some good picks here. And I think I went out of order. I typically say the retro first and then say, but then we're going to get to 8-Bit Steve and talk more about what he has going on. But anyway, since I already fumbled through that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, want to show some support and get some money, and get something back for said support, patreon.com/CannedAirPod. Man, just a few bucks a month gets you access to a ton of material.
There's
like 40 episodes of the Canned Air Patreon pod. There's two retros on there. There's two comic vaults, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Two radio theater projects, all kinds of stuff and more.
Like, there is a retro, though. The first episode, you put that on there.
I just posted episode number one, which I pulled from our catalog long time ago. So if that's anything you guys would be interested in hearing, again, patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And once again, we are part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Head to evergreenpodcast.com, check out our show and some of the other great shows they have to offer over there. And I think that's it, right? Am I forgetting anything?
Nope.
Let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Here we go!
All right, the hardest games we've ever played. Jack, what you got?
Mine is the first version of the game, which I originally played the second version and beat it to hell so many times that I could have probably gone into the speedrunning thing, but it was Ninja Gaiden 2.
Oh.
That's not the one that was hard, though. Ninja Gaiden 1, that game was stupid hard.
Very hard.
I don't know if it was just because the mechanics were easier in the second one, which of course that's going to make it easier. Like, you could climb up walls, you didn't have to do that weird jump to get up the walls,
like the back and forth, that chink, chink,
yeah,
chink.
Exactly. Yeah. You could actually climb up the walls, but that game, I don't think I got very far in it, and I ended up not playing it anymore because of that same thing. Went back to 2 and beat it more and more and more.
But, you know, it hit at the right time. I mean, ninjas were freaking everything.
Oh, God,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
So maybe it didn't matter you're getting far. At least in my case, I was just like, I'm playing a ninja and I'm going up the wall. That's pretty damn cool.
And it was always good, like, anime.
Number three is actually the hardest, I think, of those three.
The third?
Number three, you don't have unlimited continues like you do in one and two. Mm. And so you can actually die, like, really late in the game on, like, the end level and have to replay the entire game. Unlike in one and two, my friend Ian, his speedrunning name is the Retrorunner. I do a speedrunning podcast with him, a very, very niche podcast, by the way. He's actually number two in the world at Ninja Gaiden right now. He's 0.3 seconds away from the world record. Wow. He's been grinding the game for 3 years to get to close. The guy who has the actual record has had it for like 7 or 8 years. So he's about to tick over on it, but yeah. Ninja Gaiden's definitely better. I find two to be the easiest of the three in the trilogy myself.
I don't know if I played three or not, but two, yeah.
I don't think I did.
It got so easy that I'd challenge myself after a while, just be like, I'm not going to die one time.
Yeah.
If I did, then I'd start over. Yeah. But I usually died one or two times.
Then you get pretty bored with the whole damn concept. Yeah. Fuck it. Fuck it. At least people like us do.
Yeah.
Speedrunners, my God, like, man, the amount of patience.
We get bored too. But like he's saying, you add a flair to it, right? Like, you're bored with the game, but like, can I beat it without dying, or now can I beat it without damage, or how fast can I do it? So you add little challenges onto it that make it entertaining. I think that's with any game. I mean, that's been happening before speedrunning was even a thing, really.
Sure, I guess I didn't think about that. All right, let's cut over to Steve. Hardest game, sir.
Hardest game of all time that I've played? This is subjective. You guys got to remember that I've played through about half of the NES library and considered like all of the hardest games that you can think of. And I have a book series that's designed to break down hard video games. And so hard to me is sort of relative. But can I do like a couple? Would that be okay? Or do you need
one? We're going to go around the circle a few times. So just do like one at a time there.
I'll just get this one out of the way. Everyone thinks this is the hardest game on the NES, Battletoads.
Oh my God, that was one of mine.
I'm sorry. But one of the things that people don't understand about that game is its physics are very unique to that specific game. A lot of the NES skills are transferable, platforming and shoot 'em ups, and use just the same clock and the same frame. So once you get good at some of the other NES games, you can kind of transport that skill. But Battletoads isn't like that. You have to completely start from scratch and learn the physics of that game. That's the hardest part of it. But once you've learned that, it gets easier. The game does have 12 stages. Most people don't know that because they can't get past stage three.
Yep, exactly.
Stage three is not even in the top four hardest stages in the game.
Good God.
There's stages later in the game that are just completely absurd to play. So it's definitely one of the hardest that I've played through.
What level was it where you were riding the jet ski thing?
That was three.
Yeah. I never got past that.
It was always like the first or second jump every time. And then by then I was
then
out
you'd
of...
send you flying like straight into the side of something or mm-hmm. yeah, like I ugh.
And by then usually out of lives and continue. So then you'd have to spend that time getting back to it again. It was
best thing about that game was the music that played when you hit pause.
Yep.
stop.
And they brought that in the remake that they did, they just released, they have there's a period part in the game where that music's playing.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Man, that's cool.
That game's fun, the new one.
I always wanted so bad growing up for the Ninja Turtles and the Battletoads to have like a mesh-up.
Hell yeah.
So freaking cool, but alas, it never happened, did it?
When I make the Battletoads Easy Way Guide, I'll have to send you guys free copies, and then you can get through the Turbo Time.
I would love that.
Can actually enjoy the game.
Yeah.
can I tell a quick story about Battletoads?
Of course.
A long time ago, I was doing interviews before I became a speedrunner. I was doing interviews for this podcast here that's locally in Michigan. And I interviewed a guy named Sean Chiplock, and he's a voice actor from Michigan. He lives in California now, but he's from Michigan. He's got voices in all kinds of games. Notably, he's got three voices in Breath of the Wild. He was Rash the Battletoad on Killer Instinct, and that's the story I'm going to tell. He was Noob Saibot in Mortal Kombat 10, and many, many, many other voices. So he's Rash the Battletoad, and I was like, oh, Battletoads is one of my favorite games. So he told the story that he's in the voice booth for Killer Instinct, and they're like, hey, we're gonna do an audio voice for the pause. Like in Killer Instinct, when you pause and you're Rash, it makes that music you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did it with his mouth, right? So he's like, well, what do you want me to do? They're like, just do whatever you think it should sound like. So they cut him the audio, and he goes, pooch, pooch, meow, meow, and he starts going like off on this tangent of like noises and stuff and like air guitaring for like quite a considerable amount of time, and they never stop him. So after like 45 seconds to a minute, he just stops. And then like he hears the button click, and they're like, yeah, not like that.
He trolls them.
Just let him keep going. Yeah, but who would have ever known that? I've never heard that story. That's awesome. Very good. All right. As far as hardest game, how about Gemini? All these games were so freaking hard. And I think they were on Super Nintendo. Well, they had to have been. It's right in the title. Super Star Wars games.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They weren't so hard. They were hard to beat, though. You could, but they were hard.
Before the internet came along and gave you all the codes to jump between levels, it was just... Nah, it was too hard, especially like Tatooine in the very first one.
Yeah.
And those goddamn sucker bat things that would like come down because let's say you kill it. You walk back two steps and then go back the way you're supposed to go. It like regenerates so quickly. So like special weapons and stuff hardly make a dent because half the people you kill just respawn and come right back out.
Yeah, they respawn right off the screen.
Yeah.
At the same spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Jawa was shooting, what, flamethrowers out of the sides and stuff like that. You had to really pay attention.
There was all on the kinds of shit. I think of like the in Empire Strikes Back, the cave and on Hoth, like that was a son of a bitch. It's like, I don't remember the cave in that movie being this complex. Like Luke was able to run right out.
Yeah, it was empty.
But yeah, so that's definitely on my list. That one, yeah, without the codes, unplayable. Mm-hmm. All right, next, Jack, what you got?
Mario. Personally, that one's for me. Yeah. Mario is one of probably the hardest games. Well, I think I've said it before, playing with my friends all the time. I would sit most of the time and watch them play because, oh, it's your turn, Jack. All right. Do, 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 do.
Dead.
Do, do, do. Platformers are probably the worst game, but Mario in particular, they're the worst for me.
But see, you didn't grow up with a Nintendo, did you?
No.
You said before. But Mario, ironically, Mario 1 and Mario 2 were the two games I've ever, like, tried to do speed runs in just because of the warp zones, you know? Like, I can, in, like, level 1, you could, in Mario, the first Mario Brothers, like, in the underground, when you go underground, there were some warp tunnels you could take that could take you to 4, and then there's another one that would take you to, like, 8 or something. You could, like, shoot through the game really quick if you... were focused. Like in the underground world, you could jump up on the ceiling where all like the coins and all that, your points and stuff were, and just run past everything.
That was the thing too, trying to play it. I didn't know where all the special stuff was, so I'd almost be running through the game all the way. And people were like, why don't you use the warp right here? What, you missed this box. I'm like, I didn't even know it was there.
My sister was so fucking vindictive when we were kids. And I remember specifically, I was timing myself. And I don't know why I was even timing myself. I guess just to go to school and be like, hey, you know, I did it in this time, because there was nothing to compare it to. But every time I get close to the end, she'd see what I was doing. She'd run in the room and hit the reset button.
Oh.
Just like a big, strong fuck you. You know, like come on. Like... and she did it more than once in the same day. Oh, I was pissed. But of course,
it's just a Nintendo game. Shut up.
Anyway, that's my sad sob story. We are back around to Steve.
Another one on the NES that people think is very, very difficult. And this is probably because of AVGN, but it's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
NES. That's a prime example of why I created the easy way, is because there are some games on the console, a lot of the games on the NES, that there's obviously the Ninja games and the Battletoads that take agility skills and muscle memory and a little timing to beat. There's games like Jekyll and Hyde where there's no real skill involved in the game. It's just knowledge. Like, once you know about the game and how it works, it becomes infinitely easier. Fester's Quest is another one of those. I just did a guide for you with paperback. Once you know where all the stuff is and how the strategies for the bosses, you can just clear the game effortlessly. Right. But playing it blind, you just die constantly and you don't know what to do. So that's kind of how that era was, as they were like exploring what was going on in different genre types and stuff. But Jekyll and Hyde is easier when you know what's actually happening. You know, it's like when you start a new job and they're like, okay, go fill out those TPS reports. And you're like, I don't know how to do that. How do I do that? Right. But then you've been there for a year and you're like, oh, yeah, I know how to do it.
Yeah.
So it's just with a little bit of knowledge. And like I said, I'll send you guys some books and you'll be surprised at how well you'll be like, man, I'm really good at this game. This is amazing.
Yeah.
It's just some common knowledge that's inside the speedrunning community that just isn't known to a lot of people. You know, we have these emulators that have, we can like rip out code and use bots to figure stuff out. We could never do that back in the day.
Sure. So,
Yeah. I would say Jekyll is probably the hardest game that people think.
I've never even tried it. I've just seen it on AVGN, you know, but I've never personally played it. You don't know it?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's like one of his...
If I saw it, I might know.
It's one of his most famous videos. I mean, that's how it kind of came on my radar. I had heard of it, but I'd never played it.
Hmm.
But, I mean, all the swearing he was doing, he seemed pretty agitated by it. Okay, how about Jurassic Park on Super Nintendo? Man, I was so into Jurassic Park, and I just wanted to love this game. And I didn't hate it. I won't say it was a bad game. Like, I didn't hate it. But, boy, was it difficult. Because you had this huge park to explore, which was essentially a maze. Limited, very limited ammo. And dinosaurs up the ass. and you couldn't save the game. You had to beat it all in one saving. There were checkpoints, like these tower things you could hit. But it was infuriating, so I never saw the end. Now, what I remember, Nintendo Power put out a whole thing on it, and I was like, oh, here we go. Okay, I've got this, you know. And as much as I love Nintendo Power, they only gave you half the map and, like, half the tricks. So, like, anything, like, in the north part of the island, like, you were just plumb fucked. Like, they didn't tell you anything.
Is that, like, an early part, or is that later that they... After so far, you'd just be like, nope, you're on your own now.
I guess, but I don't know. I mean, that's why, like, books like Steve's done here, The Easy Way, are, like, so awesome. Because, you know, looking at it, you get that same kind of feeling from a Nintendo Power, but then you actually take something from it, you know? Like, you can actually use it and get to the end of the game that you want to play. But... I mean, I still like that game. I mean, it was incredible how, you know, you'd go from that overhead, like, aerial view through the maze, and then when you'd go inside, it was like Doom, you know? And you had the keypad you had to figure out. You had to collect people's cards who were dead, like their ID cards, to get in certain gates and doors. But just an elaborate maze with dinosaurs, pretty much is what it was. But damn, was it hard. I never did see the end of it.
A lot of times, it's funny you mentioned Nintendo Power. I grew up with that stuff, obviously, and Game Pro. And what I've realized in my older age, as I'm making these guides and you know, researching all this stuff, is that a lot of these companies just gave it. They're like, hey, you random guy that works for us, make a guide for this. And they a lot of times didn't even give him access to code or tips or tricks or anything like that. He had to basically just like call the Nintendo Power hotline, like go down to that department and get information and kind of compile it himself, right? And he could go to the video department and have them rip out the graphics for him. But, you know, those people weren't getting paid for that. It was like extra stuff, right? So that's why a lot of those guides are just kind of all over the place. They're like hodgepodge, you know?
Yeah.
The Final Fantasy one's really good because Square Enix, you know, like gave them stuff like, hey, make this cool and here's maps and stuff. But like stuff that we can do now, I can just do that all myself. I can just rip everything out of the game. And I know people that can, I can message them and be like, hey, this part of the game here, this is really weird. Can you like figure this out for me? And they'll just break the code down and use a bot and give me actual real-time data about what's happening and how the code logic works, right? Wow. And so I can do things that they didn't have access to back then. So when you buy one of my books that's published by Higgins Alley, it's the absolute most advanced thing that's ever been produced for that particular game. Like I said, because we didn't have any of that stuff yet.
Right. Yeah. I can't wait to look further into these books. I have looked at the Fester's. Well, I looked at both of them, actually. I did look at both of them, but very incredible. I mean, just it looks like a fun read, even if you don't have the game, honestly, because, again, it's not just strategy on the game. But see, I'm jumping ahead of myself. How far are we here? 20 minutes?
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's not your fault. I'm just excited to talk about them. Where are we? Whose turn is it?
I think it's my turn now.
Go for it.
Earthworm Jim was one of the hardest ones that I played too. I don't even remember how far I got, but it was somewhere where there's a cow that would fall down every once in a while. It wasn't very far in.
I got maybe three stages in.
I think that's probably about as far as I could ever get.
That was a fun game, though, regardless.
Yeah, it was. So it was funny and fun.
Something about the way the camera followed him. You know, it was only like a second behind, kind of like a cameraman was trying to keep up with him because he was moving too fast. And I don't remember. I mean, we always thought when we were kids, like when the dogs would bite him or something, like he'd go, damn!
Yeah. And just taking his head out and whiplash and stuff and swinging. I think that was some of the hardest part because you were never really clear on what you could jump on or swing from some of the times.
Yeah.
Unless there was, I think, maybe like a drip or something like that. That
you could... It was so freaking satisfying, too, that when you did like land, like say you jump and then you whip your own body and like hit the hook that you're supposed to, there's like that satisfying Indiana Jones like whip crack noise. Like, man, like sometimes you can just jump back and forth just to like get the feeling of satisfaction. Man, I want to play that game now. I don't know if I've ever played any of the other ones. What's that?
That game's awesome. I wish they had an NES version, but it came out Super Nintendo era, forward 16-bit era. But
Earthworm Jim is awesome. I always played Genesis on it.
I mean, I think it's the same game, just different ports, you know?
Probably better color.
On the Genesis?
No, Genesis didn't have better
color. Okay, I was going to say, what are you talking about?
Have you guys ever played a game called Ikari Warriors?
Oh, yeah.
I just saw one of the nerd talk about that not too long ago.
So the reason why this one's overlooked, I think, is because there's a code in the game, sort of like the Contra code, but you don't have to like put it in before you play. So when you lose all your lives in the game, you can hit ABBA and it'll just respawn you. And you can do that infinitely and just kind of like trash clear the game because you have infinite lives. But if you try to beat the game without that code, you have three lives, no continues, and four whole stages, and it takes about a little over an hour to clear casually, maybe even an hour and a half. So you can only make three mistakes for an hour and a half clearing this game, and there's just bullets everywhere. The game's incredibly glitchy. It's really, really tough to complete. I personally have never played through it. I'm trying putting it off. Like, I don't know. But it's really tough. I think if you're going to go on the NES and you really want to see like the absolute cutting edge brutality, play Ikari Warriors and try not to use that code.
Yeah, based on what I saw, I have not the patience for that. Even the games that, except for Mario, I could probably play Mario all the time, but outside of that, I do not have the patience for your Ninja Gaidens, your Ninja Turtles, those games anymore. I wish I did, but damn, they just pissed me off too bad.
I actually want to try playing Ninja Gaiden too, because it's been 20 years at least since I've played it. Just to see if I could still do it.
Well, you know, like,
or have the patience to get through it.
A while back, I bought the Retron, which is like the console that will play. I think it was a Retron 2. It's just Super Nintendo and regular Nintendo games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll get it out, hook it up. I'll get the Turtles game out, some other things. But, oh man, it's going to be cool. I put that Turtles game in. I lose my first turtle and I'm so pissed off. I'm like, oh my God. And it makes me so mad to think that people actually got to the Technodrome and Shredder. I'm like, how? Mm-hmm. How the fuck did you do that? Like, I could never get past the dam. I got past the dam once, I think. But that was always where I lost them.
I helped my friends get to, well, I remember helping through the dam, but they ended up getting to the Technodrome and they never beat it. I don't think I was, I think I it was... I went home for dinner or something like that and came back.
How many levels were there between the Technodrome and the dam?
I don't even know. I think there was a big section of the game that I didn't get to see because it was at their house and I was at
home. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? You buy these games and then you'll never see parts of them unless you like really buckle down and make it like a strong priority.
I love that game though.
It's a fun game. It's still a fun game, but the music was cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, I might have to put some of that in here.
Didn't like it being one player at a time, though. That's the only part. Switch between.
Have you seen the new Turtles game coming out? I can't wait to play Shredder,
Shredder's Revenge, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I cannot wait for that. That's going to be amazing. But anyway, we're not talking about cool upcoming games. We're talking about hard games. But anyway, I think unless anyone else had another pick they wanted to bring up quick, I think we probably reached a good point to move on.
I think going back to some of those old games just makes you mad because games now are so much easier. Even if they are hard, they're still easier to play, I think.
I think you're taken by the hand more so nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you're, I don't know. There's two ways to think about it. It's to like think either A, these people were really trying to give us a challenge, or two, they just didn't give a shit enough about the game and made it almost impossible and we're going to beat it even, you know.
Well, I think some of that, just the technology, because you could push jump and now it'll instantly jump exactly when you push the button.
Oh, instead of there being like a delayed reaction. Yeah. Or like in the, what was it, Bart versus the Space Mutants, like where they give you a jump that just barely clears anything. So you've got to be a pro at it. But all right, we're going to jump to a quick commercial. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with 8-Bit Steve.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
All right, and we're back. And we just wrapped up our retro roundtable, and we are now talking with Steve Lin, 8-Bit Steve. Steve, again, thank you so much for being here, man.
Thanks for having me on, man. I've been talking to Randy for a long time, so.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, we touched base on Torg last year. I was going to be a guest there, and then COVID happened.
Right.
I'll probably be back for Torg this year, almost certainly. I live in Detroit, so it's not very far from me.
Right.
To come down.
We'll have to see you there then. We'll be there.
We should be there.
Yeah. We'll beat some games.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll watch you beat some games.
So how did this all start for you? How did you first get into like the professional speedrunning game?
It's kind of weird. When you hear, there's always the cliche thing, right? That people will say like, well, I was gaming from a young age. And, you know, the thing is just like, there's like millions and millions of these Nintendos sold. So a lot of kids were gaming from a young age. So that's not a real indicator. But for me, I made the NES was basically the only thing that I had, right? I didn't have a lot of friends when I was growing up. We moved around a lot. So I basically was just at my house playing NES all the time by myself. And I would go to rental stores and rent games. I would complete them. I'd go back. And there was a rental store that was right by my grandma's house. It was literally like a block or two away. I could walk there back in five minutes or 10 minutes. And so my mom set up an arrangement with them right when we moved over by there. And she was like, hey, look, my son like beats NES games like crazy. And he doesn't want a 3-day rental. So like, can we work it out where if he rents a game and he wants to bring it back, can you just swap it out with another game as long as it's in stock? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. And then they like immediately regretted that for like a years because I would beat a game and then bring it back. And sometimes I think 3 or 4 times in one day, I would do that sometimes, or I would just be like, this game sucks. And I just take it back and they'd give me a different game. Right. And so I was able to play through a lot more NES games that way, I think, than most people were, because their mom's not going to drive them back to Blockbuster or wherever they're renting games and get a new one. But I could just walk over there and the lady would swap the game for me. And so that's how I started like getting really familiar with the console and that kind of stuff early on. But as far as speedrunning goes, I was in a relationship for a long time, like 7 years, and we were engaged, and then it broke off, and I was kind of like, what am I going to do with my life? You know?
Right.
And I was like, well, I like music and I like retro games. Those are the two things that I love. So which one am I going to do? And then I started to watch Games Done Quick files, you know, videos. And I was like, man, these guys are crazy. Like they were at a level that I didn't even know was possible. So I started to get real interested in like finding out who the best NES players were. Started going on Twin Galaxies, Speed Demos Archive, all these websites, and just started to play. And so that's kind of how it started. I just was like, am I good? Like, can I be good? Or what does it mean to be good? Like, does anyone even care? Right.
I would say you've hit quite the level of good. I saw on the Friday the 13th Kickstarter video, there was a quick scene there where it showed you sitting down with somebody in front of an audience. I believe it was with a Friday the 13th game. Mm-hmm. And he had never played it before, and you just sat next to him and told him what to do, just verbally gave instructions, and having played it for the first time, he beat it his first time.
Yeah, so before I became like a streamer or speedrunner or whatever, I was just kind of dabbling and stuff. I would do these shows in Michigan, like bar shows. So I would call up a bar, and it'd be like, hey, like on a Friday night, like, hey, what do you guys got going on tonight? Is there a band? And they're like, no, we have nothing going on. I was like, hey, I'll come into your bar and I'll bring a Nintendo, I'll hook it up in your bar, right? And people can come up and play it and take on these like challenges, and I'll give away prizes. I'll provide all the prizes. Like if anyone in the bar wants to come up, they try to do something that I ask them to do. If they do it, I give them free games. They're like, hell yeah. So I'd go into these bars, like gaming bars, or, you know, I tried not to go to like really crazy dangerous bars. Yeah. But so one of the things that I would do is I would put a bunch of games up on the board, and I would say, okay, at 9 o'clock, I'm going to play through Friday the 13th, and at 10 o'clock, I'm going to do Fester's Quest, and at midnight, I'm going to knock out Mike Tyson. And I put all these like, you know, things, like little mini shows for the bar.
Right.
And so that was like a shtick that I did for a long time. And it didn't really gain any traction, but it was really fun, and I got free drinks and food, and it was like, cool, I'm playing video games and it's fun.
Right.
And so what I noticed is as I started doing more live shows and started to get more serious with the competitive side of it, people would come up to me and the first thing that they would say is, hey, have you beaten game X? Like whatever game, like you guys were just talking about your hard game, check. Have you beat Jurassic Park? Have you beat Empire Strikes Back? Right? Have you beat Mario? Whatever game that troubled them as a kid, they're like, hey, can you beat this game? Because mm-hmm. they all have that one game or one or two games that like they really, really, really want to beat. They could never beat them. And it's like still bothers them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the universal connecting force. And so over a long period of time, I was like, man, why don't these people go back and beat these games? I mean, you can just go on the internet and go on GameFAQ and look up YouTube tutorials and go on speedrun.com and find all this information and play through this game. And then I'm like, and I realized like, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to take hours of their life and go beat in a retro game, right? They don't want to. You know, that's like a 40-hour work week to try to figure out yeah. all the information that you need. Nobody has time for that, right?
Right.
So I developed a video series where I kind of like broke down easy video game or hard video games. I debuted it on a Facebook platform, retro Facebook platform. The very first video I released got 1 million organic clicks.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is really, really popular. Like people really liked it. I later removed from that platform. And I just kind of had that easy way for a while, but I never did anything with it. So the thing that you're talking about is I got invited to ESA in Sweden. So Sweden was like, hey, I submitted some runs to there. They're like, come to Sweden, show off your cool game skills, have some fun. Lots of other, you know, talented gamers were there. So the story is they had a whiteboard and it was like sitting in there in this room that they're in. And I was like, hey, what's this? People were like walking up and writing games on it. And, I was relatively unknown at the time. And they were like, hey, I was like, what is this whiteboard? And they're like, well, we have 2 blocks of times in our marathon where we just have runners on site submit runs. So like they block off that time. They don't let anyone submit games there until all the runners get on site. And then the runners can write runs in there. And then the staff decides which one of those they're going to put in there. It's a way to reward runners to get extra runs into the marathon, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, how much stuff can I write on there? And he's like, write whatever you want. So I started filling this whiteboard up with NES games, right? And I'm just filling the whole board, like just writing every NES game that I can play through, right? And it's like 30, 40 games that I have on this board. And so the one of the higher up admins came over and he's like, can you really play through all those games? And I was like, yeah, I can do all those games. And he's like, well, we can't put all those in. That's way too many games. And I was like, well, I got this thing that I do sometimes for fun where I like at bars, I just pick someone from the audience and I'd talk them through beating a hard video game. Would you guys want to do something like that? And he's like, yeah, that sounds cool. So I was like, well, can we do three games? And he's like, yeah, we'll do three games. And I was like, well, how about a staff member, right? And so this guy, Crazy Rasmus, was like, yeah, I'll do it. And we did Jaws, A Boy and His Blob, and Friday the 13th. And so he'd never played the games before. I didn't tell him anything about it. He just sat down. We did Boy and His Blob first, and then Jaws, and then Friday the 13th. And he beat all three games, just with my verbal.
Wow. Comments.
Yeah, no book necessary.
That's somebody who knows their craft.
That's somebody who can follow directions.
Well, it's like I said, it seems difficult at first, but once you have the knowledge of the game, you really will believe that it's easy. Like beating Friday the 13th is very, very easy to do. It's one of the easiest games to complete. But because there's so much mystery and so much unknown stuff that's going on, it's hard to figure out what's happening, right? Jason just seemingly shows up randomly and murders you. He's killing everyone around the camp, and you're trying to find him, and you don't know what's going on. But once that's unveiled and you know how he moves around the camp and where he's going to be and what weapons are most powerful, then it's just a matter of time before you complete the game.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of Jason. It's easy. He'll be afraid of you.
So after the Sweden thing, my wife and my friend were like, hey, do something with this. Like, get off your butt and make something out of this. They're like, make a book. Like, do something, right? So I wrote the Friday 13th guide. And I was like, oh, man, this thing sucks. Like, no one's going to like this. Print media is dead. Like, no one's going to buy this, right? Mm-hmm. And I made a bunch of demo copies that I self-funded. And I just sent them out to John Riggs and Metal Jesus and AVGN and publishers. And I just sent them everywhere. And, like, didn't hear anything for months. And then eventually came around where Higgins Alley got a hold of me. And they were like, yeah, we want to sign you and publish this book. But we got to, like, you know, we got to spruce it up. Because I made it in PowerPoint. I thought PowerPoint was like, Microsoft's the best and PowerPoint's great. And so he's like, yeah, no, you can't. You got to redo the whole book. So I had to literally start over from scratch and redo the whole book in design. And we ended up making a much better quality book. It's a hardcover book that was funded on Kickstarter in one day.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was funded in one day. And honestly, if we had conventions last year, the book would be sold out. I've already sold 45% of the books, and I haven't even shown it to anyone. It's just word of mouth. I haven't advertised or gone to a convention.
Sure.
Jeez.
They're attractive looking books, that's for sure.
Well, I think people just want to learn how to beat hard games. I think that's it.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. There's something, like I was going back to a little bit earlier with those Nintendo powers, though they didn't always give you the information you needed. There was always a level of excitement when you had one, when you were looking at the game that you were, you know, that was plaguing you on those pages. And that same kind of excitement comes from these books. But again, you're getting useful information. You're being told what to do. Again, the artwork. I was seeing in the Fester Quest one, there was even like pictures from the old Adams family in there, like kind of put out throughout the book.
Yeah, those old black and whites are Jackie Coogan from the original black and white Adams Family, the original TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And the box art for Fester's Quest was drawn by Tom Dubois, who's like a very famous Konami artist. He did Blades of Steel and tons of other box covers. He used Jackie Coogan as an inspiration for that box cover, like for Fester on that box cover. And there's actually an image of Jackie Coogan making that exact smirk. That he basically copied that.
Really?
Yep. And so I used the black and whites in there to, you know, fill space on some of the pages, but it was really fun.
They're nice accents, that's for sure. Very nice accents. I dig it.
Probably use one of those books for a date night with the wife. Read this and tell me what to do while I go through and beat this game.
Sounds like a great time for her.
She likes to do that kind of stuff, though. If she can't interact while I'm playing a game, she usually tunes out no matter what it is.
You didn't tell me right.
Yeah.
I got killed.
Yeah, then blame her if I die.
One of the things I wanted to touch on is the guides that I'm producing. You guys are going to have links and stuff, but there's a new website that I have coming out called Easy Way Guides. You're going to be able to buy all the guides there, centralized source. But they're value-based. I marketed the guides to a lower price point. I may have some books that come out that are hardcover that are 400 or 500 pages that will sell for $50 or $60. But the Friday the 13th, 126-page hardcover book is only $20, right? Oh, so, yeah. And all my paperback guides are $10. right? So I'm not trying to buy a boat with selling strategy guides. I realize that this information is really niche, but it's very high quality stuff and you can get it for a value price point. You know, I want to market it to guys like yourself who don't have the time to find this stuff out and maybe work 40, 50 hours at a factory and only have a couple hours a week to game, mm-hmm. right? They would be willing to spend $10 to have all that information right in front of them in one book that's, you know, presented to them in a logical way by an expert, so they don't have to spend hours figuring that stuff out.
Right.
So that's the idea behind the books. It's like, I want to help guys like yourself beat hard games that I can beat and teach you that it's not that hard.
So as far as I'm sure these aren't going to be your only two Easy Way books. What other games are you looking at doing in the future?
Hagen's Alley has this is a sneak peek for this. I don't know when this is going to air, but Hagen's Alley has a Punch Out Kickstarter coming live. It's scheduled to go live on April 6th. It's hopefully going to do that. There's a guy named Daniel L. I got in contact with him and he was signed to Hagen's Alley. He has a comprehensive Mike Tyson's Punch Out book that he made like years ago and it never was published. So I got in contact with him and he revamped the book and it's just like this huge expansive book, right? So I was like, well, hey, how about this? I'll make a Punch Out Easy Way book and, you know, would you allow me to sell that in your Kickstarter? And he was like, yeah. So you can buy the Punch Out Easy Way, which is the next book, in that Kickstarter. It's the first place you're going to be able to purchase it in that Kickstarter. Those are going to ship first. And then you can pre-order the Punch Out on my website when that goes live here in a few days. Okay. So Punch Out is next, but I have tons of other books in the works. Obviously everybody wants Battletoads and they want the Bayou Billies and the Silver Surfers and stuff. Those are all going to come, but it's just, I want to make sure that they're quality and I don't want to just rush out, books. We just got the paperback process down. Those are brand new. We had to switch to paperback because COVID and shipping and all that. Mm. But, that's pretty much ready to go. I can now essentially produce as many guides as I can make with my current paperback production.
That's awesome, nice. Man. Well, congratulations. That's freaking sweet. Now, as far as where people can find you again, as the books, I saw the Jason one on there. I'm not sure if the, or I keep saying Jason, the Friday the 13th one's on there. I'm not sure about Fester's Quest on HagensAlley.com. There's also 8bitsteve.com as mm-hmm. well as on Twitter. And of course you're on Facebook. Twitch and YouTube. Is there anywhere else we should be sending people?
The best place to find all information about me is 8bitsteve.com. That's the number 8bitsteve.com, right? Because that's mm-hmm. got all of my centralized stuff. You can find out about my podcast there. You can click my world record list that's updated, you know, as it's real-time updated. You can send me email there. It's got links to my book. Now, if you just want to learn about the guides, easywayguides.com is going to be live here pretty soon. That's where you're going to be able to buy Fester's Quest, pre-order Punch-Out, and also the hardcover Friday the 13th book. Every time we release a new book, it's going to go live right to the website. Now, one other thing that I want to point out is that these paperbacks are printed in very limited quantities, and they're numbered. So we only print 100 of the first run of all of the paperback books. So it's very collectible. They're all numbered individually inside. Ooh, nice. After I sell out of the first print one, a PDF version will come out and we'll potentially reprint the guide, depending on, you know, popularity. Mm-hmm. But we're doing minimum print ones 100 right now until we can have conventions open back up and I can buy them in a little larger scale. But they're all individually numbered. So if you buy one now, even if it's reprinted later, that's going to have a different number in it, right? It's going to have a different colored number and stuff. So they're all sort of unique in that way.
Yeah, I understand not wanting to fill your house with boxes and books before there's a convention to unload them. Yeah, that wouldn't be fun. Well, man, this has been a freaking blast. I want to thank you for being on here with us, talking some of the hard games and sharing your cool world with us. It has been a pleasure, so thank you, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I'll see you at Torg. I'll have a lot of books by then. We'll beat some games.
Cool. That sounds like a plan to me. Jack, what do we got on the website, sir?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some of our YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget to find us on Twitter at cannedairpod and on Instagram at canned_air. And once again, patreon.com/cannedairpod, or just head to our website and click the Patreon button there. A few bucks a month gets you extra content that the normies aren't getting. Come on, people. Get in on that exclusive club. Be a founder.
Hang out long enough, you can get some merch.
Founder. Yeah, yeah. Shirts. What else? Tote bags. All kinds of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Stuff merch. With our stuff on it. Yeah.
Stuff.
Merch. We're great, great salesmen, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Ethan Steve.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and be excellent to each other.
Are mean, so I'm running away from home.
Where you gotta go?
I don't know yet, but that'll show them.
It sure will.
Shipwreck!
Parents just don't understand, and it gets lonely on the road, so be sure to listen to the Canned Air podcast.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Canned Air production.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On Press Box Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on Press Box Access.